This is Phil Farron. And I am driving around. We have a little thing at church tonight for the worship slash technical teams. So I'm just going to go ahead and record the podcast now, probably head over to the church after that, get this uploaded, get that out of the way, maybe get some writing done, get that out of the way, and then do the thing at the church. And then when I get home, maybe work on the Halloween costume a little bit. So I think I know what I'm doing for the Halloween costume at this point. And I think that's all going to be fine. It will be guy humor. So, yeah. I think it'll be fine. So anyway, at least it will be visually interesting. Let's put it that way. All is well. Work was fine this week. Had a few exciting moments here and there. But, you know, hey, that's the way it goes sometimes. And so that's good. It's interesting because we've got a new guy in who's going to be working with the AGWM, World Missions. And, you know, it's so fun to watch someone coming in new. And it's such an interesting exercise to explain what's going on to other people and watch their eyeballs get wide. Because, yeah, so, I mean, there's rationale for most of the stuff that we're doing, but it's not always immediately obvious. And so it's kind of fun to go through those exercises of explaining it again. And sometimes you just say, you know, they got started doing it this way, and we're still doing it that way, you know, et cetera, et cetera. Writing is going fine. I could have been done a little earlier. I'm just finishing up now. I think I'm in the next to the last chapter. I could have been done earlier, but with Blame It on Someone Else Day, that took enough time that it slowed me down enough that last week, I think is probably the worst week I have ever had writing in terms of not hitting my goals. I was 4,000 words down last week. Was it last week? Yes, it was last week. I can't remember. Anyways, I believe it was last week. I was 4,000 words down just because it was just like one right after another. You know, we had a small groups meeting on Sunday that just killed a bunch of time. And then I had a dentist appointment that killed some time. And then there was this that killed some time. And that that killed some time. And by the time it all got done, there was just, I was 4,000 words down. But I'm near the end of the book. So, you know, I just went ahead and I thought, well, I can make it up next week and I'll still be okay. Theoretically, I'd like to have this book ready to go to beta readers by mid-September, because then I can ask that they come back in mid-November, before Thanksgiving. So, you know, I think we're going to hit that. I mean, I've got the next to the last chapter is always kind of the news feed type chapter, and that writes really fast. And then I have to make the epilogue work. That's going to be a little interesting, but it feels like it's there. It feels like it's there. So, you know, epilogue is where we try to make people cry. It's going to be an interesting pull. It feels like it's okay. Anyways, so this weekend, the goal would be this weekend to go ahead and get the epilogue done. And then once I get that done, then I can loop back around, start doing my final read-through and cleaning stuff up. And then the next big thing is cover shoot. You know, figuring out what we're going to do for a cover. I had no idea, but then it just starts coming. It's always an amazing thing that I don't know what I'm doing, 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 and then I know what I'm doing. Because it's like, I don't know what I'm doing until I have to know what I'm doing, and then I know what I'm doing. And living within that tension, the young man who lives in our rock house has been hunting and hunting and hunting for a job and trying to find something that'll work with his schedule. As it stands now, he's done an interview and he has two possibilities. He had no, couldn't find anything, couldn't find it. Now he has two up. Now he's waiting again, you know, and I just keep encouraging him and saying, you know, step at a time, step at a time. Just live now. You know, don't borrow trouble from tomorrow. When you get there, you'll have an answer. And, you know, that's the way it is in my life. When you get there, you'll have an answer. So, it was Blame It on Someone Else Day last week. That was fun. I had gotten both parts of the costume finished. There was a part one and a part two. I didn't actually use the part two anywhere. I just wasn't mentally ready to use it anywhere, but I did put it on the video. And it probably would have been cute if I had taken the time to go ahead and do it, but there's just a few extra things I had to get done. So for those who aren't on Facebook and haven't seen it yet, Blame It on Someone Else Day, I did the official mascot, quote unquote, for Blame It on Someone Else Day, which is Bridezilla's evil step cousin, Bridasaurus Rex. So I had made a wedding dress, actually a wedding skirt and a little top. And I had made a t-shirt that I had custom printed that, you know, had Bridezilla on it shouting, "It's your fault," and a woman saying, "Help," and down at the bottom, "Worse than Bridezilla." And then on the back, it had "Introducing Bridasaurus Rex, official mascot of Blame It on Someone Else Day." So, but I had that and, you know, I had a wig and then I had a Tyrannosaurus Rex mask. And a tiara and a veil, the whole bit. And then I had Tyrannosaurus Rex claws as well. And so I had made a, what's called a high-low skirt, wedding skirt, that had a tulle, ruffled tulle all on the inside, and then a really ornate material on the outside, and had gotten a couple of, had gotten a pair of pumps, 3-inch pumps, that I had covered with that fabric as well, and et cetera, et cetera. People seemed to enjoy it. It was fun. It was fun. We had a lot of fun. They seemed to get a big kick out of it. So, so that's a good addition to the repertoire of costumes. And it worked out well. And I went to see my dentist Friday evening, or Friday afternoon, and wore it down there. They all got a big kick out of that. And so, one just fun moment. Was that there was a lady who saw me in the parking lot pulling my outfit on because it was a big hoop skirt, so I couldn't drive with that on. So I had to put it on in the parking lot. I'm pulling this on. I drive up, pull into the dentist office just as she's pulling in. I'm like, oh, man, you know. But I thought, well, I got to get dressed. So I started pulling everything on. She kind of gave me an odd look, went inside, I guess ask them about it inside. But then, of course, I make my entrance and, you know, we do the shtick. And pretty soon she realizes I'm okay. Just crazy. So then I got to talking with her. And she was telling about her experience as a little girl with a hoop skirt. Something I had never heard before. She said that she had a hoop skirt that was actually had balloons on the inside, had inflatable bladders on the inside of it that she had blow up, turned it into a hoop skirt. And she said no one ever told her as a little girl what to do when you sat down in a hoop skirt. And so she, you know, has her little petticoat on. She has all that. She's going to church and she's all dolled up and she's, you know, thinking this is great. And she goes in and she sits down on the pew, and of course the whole hoop skirt comes up and, you know, hits her in the face, because that's what happens when you sit down in a hoop skirt. If you don't hold it down, which of course she didn't know she was supposed to, well, The really cute part was, my dentist is, she's very quiet, she's very reserved, she's a good dentist, heart as big, just a huge heart, heart of gold, wonderful person. And so she had come in to check my teeth, and you know, in order to get my teeth cleaned, I had to take off the skirt as well. So, you know, but we're chatting, and I told her that story about one of her other clients being in a hoop skirt and the skirt coming up. And my dentist just got so tickled at that story. I have never seen my dentist that tickled. She's very reserved usually. And she was actually bending over, giggling silently. She just got so tickled at that story. And I just, it was so fun. The moment was just so fun to see her just enjoying herself. So anyway, so good. That was a success. We were good. Anyways, writing's good, costume's good, all good, good, good. Everything's good, family good. You know, still hearing about people struggling with COVID and, you know, people getting hospitalized and blah, 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 blah. Although, I did hear, if my wife heard correctly, I was surprised, her cousin, who has cancer, when he contracted COVID just recently, they did admit him to the hospital so they could watch him. And my wife says that from what she has heard, that they actually gave him ivermectin. Now, if that's true, yay, you know, that's amazing. You know, maybe there's a little movement. I can't remember when I started thinking this. Maybe it was just this week. Maybe it was last week. I'm going to repeat myself if it was last week. But if it was last week, that I started thinking this, I'm really hoping, that once the FDA comes and gives the vaccines final approval, so they're not under emergency authorization anymore, what I'm hoping is that we get to the place where we can actually start giving people early treatment, as opposed to just sending them home until they can't breathe. I'm hoping that once the vaccines get protected, that the pressure to not allow any other treatment will lift, and then people, you know, in the medical establishment will start going, oh, you know, I guess there is some evidence that ivermectin seems to work. Huh, that's interesting. You know, I mean, because we're moving through the stages of truth. I mentioned this a couple of weeks ago, that a quote from a guy I had heard about, that the stages of truth are, what was it? It's not bewilderment, it's belittling. That first, truth is belittled and ridiculed, and then it's violently opposed, and then finally, it's accepted as if it's self-evident. So, you know, I'm hoping we're moving through those stages, because I really don't care. I don't care whether people know that I knew about ivermectin ahead of time, if ivermectin turns out to be what it seems to be. I don't care. What I care is that people who need medical help get the medical help that they need, so they don't end up in the hospital on ventilators and die. Because the vast majority of people, according to the people I'm looking at, one of the doctors, Peter McCullough, he was asked to estimate, or he gave as his estimation, that the death rate for COVID, he said, once we figured out, you know, what we were doing, he said, by doing early treatment, he's convinced that they could have reduced the death rate by 85%. There would still be some people who died, but nowhere near. And that's really all I care about. And especially, I don't want any more of my friends dying needlessly. So, hopefully we are getting through this. And like I said, once the vaccines get their final FDA approval, I'm really, really hoping that at that point, then we will allow, you know, the medical establishments will finally go, oh yeah, well, okay, I guess. Because I can't believe that anyone in the medical establishment actually thought we would get to 100% vaccination. It's just, there's no way that happens. It's too many pre-existing medical conditions. It's too much. So as long as the vaccines are protected, hopefully we'll say, oh yeah, that makes sense. So we'll see. As far as topic today, there is a topic that, they use the term stupid. maybe we'll use the term silly as opposed to stupid. Although, I know I personally have felt at times that I have done stupid things, but I have also characterized that at times for people as just silly, because there's a little more kindness in that word. But sometimes people are aggressively silly, and I suppose that could be classified as quote-unquote stupid. But maybe we'll just say silly. So every time I say the word silly, I'm substituting that for the word stupid in this article. Hopefully it doesn't feel like there's that much wind. I'm in a cemetery. I'm going to go ahead and slip on a noise dust cover, or second, wind cover. There we go. Hopefully that doesn't distort the sound too much, but if some wind actually happens to kick up, that'll help. Okay, so the name of this article was Why some of the smartest people can be so very silly, i.e. stupid. So a few years before he died in exile from Nazism, the Austrian novelist Robert Musil delivered a lecture in Vienna, quote, on silliness, unquote. I don't think this is going to work. I'm just going to have to use stupid. At the heart was the idea that stupidity was not mere dumbness, not a brute lack of processing power. Dumbness, for Musil, was straightforward, indeed almost honorable. Stupidity was something very different and much more dangerous. Dangerous precisely because some of the smartest people, the least dumb, were often the most stupid. Musil's lecture bequeaths us an important set of questions. What exactly is stupidity? How does it relate to morality? Can you be morally good and stupid, for instance? How does it relate to vice? Is stupidity a kind of prejudice, perhaps? And why is it so domain-specific? Why are people often stupid in one area and insightful in another? Musil's own answer, which centered around pretentiousness, is too focused on the dilettantism of interwar Vienna to serve us now, but his questions and his intuition about stupidity's danger are as relative as ever. So the article goes on to say that stupidity, i.e. silliness, is a very specific cognitive failing. This article claims that stupidity occurs when you don't have the right conceptual tools for the job. And that results in an inability to make sense of what is happening and a resulting tendency to force phenomena into crude, distorting pigeonholes. They said the easiest way to introduce this idea is with a tragic case. Apparently, British high command during the First World War, frequently understood trench warfare using concepts and strategies from a cavalry battle. As one of Field Marshal Douglas Haig's subordinates later remarked, They thought of the trenches as mobile operations at the halt, i.e., as fluid battle lines, with a simple caveat that nothing, in fact, had budged for years. Unsurprisingly, this did not serve them well in formulating a strategy. They were hampered beyond the shortage of material resources by a kind of cognitive obsolescence, a failure to update their cognitive tools to fit the task at hand. So they said stupidity will often arise when an outdated conceptual framework is forced into service, mangling the user's grip on some phenomenon. We all make mistakes for all kinds of reasons. Stupidity is rather one specific and stubborn kind of error. Historically, philosophers have worried a great deal about the irrationality of not taking the available means to a goal. Tom wants to get fit, yet his running shoes are quietly gathering dust. The stock solution to Tom's quandary is simple willpower. Stupidity is different from this. It is rather a lack of the necessary means, a lack of the necessary intellectual equipment. Combating it will typically require not brute force, but the construction of a new way of seeing ourselves and the world. So the article points out that this kind of thing is perfectly compatible with intelligence. The general who conceptualized of trench warfare as cavalry at a halt, he said, was by any standards a smart man. They said, in at least some cases, intelligent actively abets stupidity by allowing pernicious rationalism. When Harry Houdini, the illusionist, took Arthur Conan Doyle, the inventor of Sherlock Holmes, through the tricks underlying the seances in which Conan Doyle devoutly believed, Conan Doyle's reaction was to concoct a ludicrously elaborate counter-explanation as to why it was precisely the true mediums who would appear to be frauds. So you've got a situation where something is working, deluding you away from what is the answer potentially that you're seeking, but instead of finding that answer, you end up going down this path of destruction. The author goes on to say, while I have induced it via conceptual obsolescence, stupidity is also compatible with a kind of misguided innovation. Considering a country that explicitly imports new conceptual tools not from the past but from a very different place, global debates over social justice, for example, are now dominated by a set of ideas and terms taken from the United States, a nation marked by an incredibly specific historical and cultural trajectory. Simply transferring that framework to other countries, such as those in which class is less starkly racialized, for example, states reliant on exploiting white migrant labor from Eastern Europe, or in which it is racialized in much more complex ways, for instance, states such as South America, is conceptually and socially risky. So, what's interesting about all of this is the fact that you can have very smart people who get deranged and deluded and don't realize they're being deranged and deluded. And obviously, I believe this is a work of the flesh, but before we get to that, let me just finish up the article, because there might be something here that might be of interest to you all. The author goes on to say, stupidity has two features that make it particularly dangerous when compared to other vices. First, unlike character flaws, stupidity is primarily a property of groups or traditions, not individuals. After all, we get most of our concepts, our mental tools, from the society we're raised in. Suppose a problem with Haig had been laziness. There was no short of energetic generals to replace him. But if Haig worked himself to the bone within the intellectual prison of the 19th century military tradition, then solving the difficulty becomes harder. You will need to introduce a new conceptual framework. Once stupidity has taken hold of a group or society, it is thus particularly hard to eradicate. Inventing, distributing, and normalizing new concepts is tough work. And unfortunately, at least in my mind, we have adopted a whole set of philosophies among a whole bunch of people in this country, and they are not good and they are destructive. Second, the article says, stupidity begins more stupidity due to a profound ambiguity of its nature. If stupidity is a matter of the wrong tools for the job, whether an action or stupid is stupid will depend on what the job is, just as a hammer is perfect for some tasks and wrong for others. Take politics, where stupidity is particularly catching. A stupid slogan chimes with a stupid voter. It mirrors the way they see the world. The result is that stupidity can, ironically, be extremely effective in the right environment. A kind of incapacity is, in effect, being selected for. So, and that's true, too. We see that all over the place. So, for instance, one of the things that stunned me recently, and I may have mentioned this last week as well, I kind of lose track, and especially I lose track on Saturdays, because I talked to a bunch of friends, and we talked about a bunch of stuff, and okay, I apologize if I mentioned this last week. I think I mentioned Sam Harris last week. So Sam Harris is a materialistic atheist. He's such a materialist, he doesn't even believe in free will. Everything is mechanistic. Although I have heard him talk about consciousness and the mystery of consciousness, so maybe there's something there. But he was criticizing Brent Weinstein about, and Brent Weinstein and Heather Hyens' discussions about vaccines and about ivermectin and all those types of things. And in the process of questioning them, he, a very smart man, a great logician, according to Heather Hyens, said, well, there's a bifurcation with COVID. Okay, as soon as you hear someone say a bifurcation, a binary condition, well, it's either this or that. Binary thinking is a cognitive distortion. It is exceedingly rare that things are black or white. That usually there's a whole lot of shades of grays in pretty much everything in this life. But Sam Harris, who should know better than this, said, according to Heather Hyens, that he said something like, well, you got to understand there are people who understand what a terrible disease COVID is, and they realize that vaccines are the only answer. And you've got people who just don't really understand how terrible COVID is, and those people, you know, can dismiss vaccines. Okay, well, you've put two conditions there that aren't necessarily and immediately conjoined together. So that's a straw man argument. Because basically you've said anyone who isn't wholeheartedly in support of a vaccine obviously doesn't understand how bad COVID is. Well, no, that's not true. You've got two conditions there. There can be two different alternatives. So you at least have four different possible positions. This is a very intelligent man, and yet he has a cognitive distortion that we could label a kind of stupidity, cognitive distortion, but in the right area, it does serve some good, i.e., if the people Sam Harris is talking to leads them to get vaccines, and if those vaccines help them to not get sick and help them to not die, then great. That's great. That's a good outcome. But that doesn't mean that the cognitive distortion isn't still there. And when I hear the term stupidity, Actually, I'm going to run to Walmart real quick and get some food. So I'm going to start my car back up now that I don't need to read anymore. And we'll just talk on the way over to the Walmart. You know, when I hear the term stupidity and silliness and all that kind of stuff, what I immediately go to is the activity of the flesh. And the flesh is so good at this. It's so good about getting people focused intently on one thing and getting them distorted in that way and just reinforcing it and reinforcing it. And I would even make the claim that in order to get to truly stupid behavior, you really need the deception that comes from the flesh. Because if you would just slow down and think about it for a moment, you know, you would realize where your error is. And the classic example that I've always given of that is road rage. And when someone cuts you off in traffic, suddenly you're angry. Well, why are you angry? Because you're being stupid in a way. And the reason that you're being stupid is because you have one view and you can't see anything else, even though you could if you would just look away for a moment. And the energy that's behind that only seeing that one view is the flesh. So what the flesh is just feeding you and feeding you and feeding you is, he meant to do that. He meant to cut you off. He saw you were there and he wants you to have an accident. And then you go, you know. You're convinced, you know, that. I'm trying to figure out how to get out of the cemetery here. I need to back up a little bit. And you're convinced, and yet if you just stop for a moment and tell yourself, I don't know that that's true. I don't know if they actually saw me. How many times have I missed someone? Maybe they just got a phone call that someone has been injured in their family and they're trying to get there to help them. How do I know that they're not in distress? I've been in distress and done stupid things. All of a sudden, that close-minded silliness that you're experiencing, that stupidity, will just evaporate. It's just, and it's gone. And it's gone because you've managed to back your way out of this stupidity, this silliness that's been imposed by the flesh. The other example that comes to mind is that I, at one time, and I mentioned in this in my book, Still Whispers, at one time, my garage door wasn't going up all the way. And so instead of getting that fixed, I thought, well, this isn't any big deal. What I can just do is, it wasn't that the garage door was going up all the way. It was that something, there was some reason I had to shut the garage door from inside and then run and then hop over the little light thing. And I had done it for a week because I just hadn't bothered to call and get the thing replaced. And what I was being told by the flesh is, oh, well, you're so patient. You're so long-suffering that you can do this, and it just doesn't bother you at all. You don't need to call because you can just do this because you're so patient. And I was just being dumb. I just should have called. It was just stupid. But I was getting reinforced from the flesh that the reason that I hadn't called was because of my nobility. And so then at one point I had hopped over it, and then I realized I was missing something. And so then I whipped around to rush back into the garage and just clocked my head on the garage door as it was coming down. And then the flesh would have liked me to get mad, but by that point, I was well aware that it was flesh, and I just bust out laughing. Because I realized, okay, this is dumb. I have been stupid. I have been silly. And if you realize that when things happen to you like that and there is some kind of bad outcome, the first thing you should just do is slow down and say, okay, how was I silly in this? How was I / stupid in this? What did I miss that caused this to come about that I should have been able to see if I hadn't been so bound up in the flesh. And then as part of that, you can recognize that while you were bound up in that thing, there was some attitude in you that was outside the boundaries. Love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness, and self-control. I was outside the boundaries on that garage door because I was patting myself on the back and congratulating myself for being such a humble person. That's arrogance. And it's outside love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness, and self-control. And then what I can take forward into the future is to listen to myself. And if I hear myself telling myself, you know, you are a great guy. How wonderful a guy you are. You're tremendous. Okay. At that point, I should really slow down. Why am I telling myself this? And what kind of failure is this setting myself up for? So, you know, one of the good things for me about this approach is that while I may not be able to tell exactly what the silliness is that I'm engaged in at that point, at least I have a mechanism to recognize that I am engaged in a silliness. And if I pay attention to that, I can slow myself down. And to put it in terms of the person who wrote the article, try to change my cognitive framework. Try to get my cognitive framework adjusted so that I can get back to something that makes sense and I can relieve whatever blindness it's causing me. So anyways, it's all really, really very interesting. And it's going to be very, very interesting to see how much longer this is all going on. And I'm just really hoping that we are moving past the silliness that we've been engaged in with COVID. You know, because at this point, I have relatives who are battling COVID and, you know, they seem to be getting better. But the difficulty with COVID is you can have a situation where you seem to be getting better and then all of a sudden, you know, your body flares up and you get, you know, all these weird symptoms, and then you hit the hospital, and for the most part, the hospitals don't have any, well, I can't say that. In Springfield, Missouri, the hospitals don't seem to have much good options for you. And thankfully, I had a friend who ended up in the hospital. They thought it was COVID, might have just been a heart issue. They never could tell him whether it was COVID or not, which is really weird because, I mean, I would think they would give him a test, but they were like, yeah, we don't know. What are we talking? What? So anyways, but he is out of the hospital, thankfully. So thank God for that. At least we didn't lose him. But it's just interesting times. And it'll be interesting to see where we go from here. I'm going to run into Walmart. I'm going to grab a little snack to eat. It's not quite time for me starting to eat yet. But you know what? I may just go ahead and start eating anyways. Because I need to get in, get this uploaded, get some writing done, etc., etc., etc. So I trust you will have a wonderful, wonderful weekend. This is Phil Ferrand, and I haven't made it home. But I am at the end of this podcast. Have a great weekend, everyone.